Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm Dmitry Atapin.
And I am Haeyoung Park. And we are delighted to guide you through the opening program of the Music at Menlo 2025 season, Constellations Ensemble Magic, the program titled Duo Dialogues.
As David Finkel puts it, the intimacy of duo music making has beguiled composers for centuries and challenged musicians to deliver performances that are both soloistic and deeply collaborative.
This program brings that idea to vivid life, offering a fascinating exploration of four distinct instruments, horn, cello, clarinet, and violin, each paired with a piano in a rich musical dialogue. We'll witness how composers across time and place have approached the unique puzzle of blending timbre, range, and the individual character of each instrument. Along the way, we'll trace the evolution of the duo sonata itself.
The duo sonata holds a central place in the chamber music tradition. It's not merely two players sharing a stage. It's two artistic voices engaged in an intricate, expressive conversation where balance, nuance, and mutual responsiveness are essential.
While early sonatas often cast one instrument in the leading role, from Beethoven onward, we see a shift toward genuine partnership. These works push the expressive boundaries of both instruments, demanding not only dazzling technical command, but also profound interpretive depth.
This program spans eras and styles, from Beethoven's spirited sonata for piano and horn to Mendelssohn's passionate cello sonata No. 2, Poulenc's witty yet poignant clarinet sonata, and Saint-Saëns' fiery and virtuosic violin sonata No. 1.
As you listen, we invite you to tune in closely to the unfolding dialogues, the give and take, the tension and release, the moments of tenderness and brilliance that make duo music so endlessly captivating.
We open the 2025 Music at Menlo Festival with none other than the great Ludwig van Beethoven, but in a slightly unusual guise, in a sonata scored for the horn and piano. The horn sonata in F major was composed in the year 1800, reportedly in just a few days, some say just one or two, and it was written for the celebrated horn virtuoso Giovanni Punto, one of the most renowned horn players of the age. Punto was famous for his masterful command of the hand-stopping technique, which allowed the players to introduce their hands into the bell of the instrument and produce chromatic notes on the natural horn, an instrument that at the time still lacked valves. His artistry was not only admired, but seen as crucial to advancing the horn's expressive and technical possibilities. At this point in his life, Beethoven was a rising star, freshly 30, making his name across Europe as a brilliant pianist and composer. Collaborating with leading performers like Punto gave Beethoven both artistic inspiration and the chance to elevate his own reputation. This sonata was on one hand a tribute to Punto's mastery and also a musical experiment, pushing the boundaries of what the horn could do. The sonata unfolds in three movements. The first follows a classic sonata form and opens with a triumphant, noble horn fanfare, capturing the instrument's bold, hunting call character. This opening arpeggio is drawn directly from the natural harmonic series of the horn in F, and the piano responds immediately with a lighter, playful reply. From the outset, we hear a spirited musical conversation. And take note of the virtuosic piano writing. Beethoven himself played the piano at the premiere and clearly made sure to give himself a worthy challenge. The development section begins with another horn call, this time voiced by the piano, in the dark key of C minor, before the horn breaks in almost immediately with an entrance in E flat major. From there, Beethoven explores a series of distant key centers. What's remarkable is that while such tonal shifts seem ordinary to us today, they were anything but in Beethoven's time. It was thanks to Punto's extraordinary technical skill that the horn part could venture so far beyond its natural harmonic series. The second movement is brief, lasting barely a minute and a half. Set in F minor, it opens with dotted rhythms that evoke the solemn tread of a funeral march. But rather than expanding into a full slow movement, it serves as a reflective interlude, gently setting the stage for the energetic finale with a brief cadenza of the piano connecting into it. As you can hear, the final movement, Rondo, is brimming with wit, rhythmic bounce, and playful exchanges. Interestingly, the piano opened with the same three-note motif the horn introduced at the start of the first movement. Throughout the movement, we hear the wide variety of textures Beethoven weaves into the sonata. The piano constantly oscillating between steady duple rhythms and faster-flowing triplets. This rhythmic interplay creates a sense of variety and vitality, playing a key role in making the music so enchanting. Today, this sonata remains a cornerstone of the horn repertoire, one of the few major classical era works that casts the horn as a true soloist within the sonata genre. We can thank Giovanni Punto for inspiring Beethoven to create this remarkable piece, a work that continues to challenge and delight performers and audiences alike. Now we turn our attention to one of the treasures of the Romantic cello repertoire, Felix Mendelssohn's Sonata for Cello and Piano No. 2 in D major, completed in 1843. Born in 1809, Mendelssohn, as you will hear us say countless times, was a child prodigy of astonishing brilliance. By the age of 17, he had already composed the miraculous Octet for Strings, which closes our festival this year, and the unforgettable Overture to a Midsummer Night's Dream. But Mendelssohn's genius was not just raw talent. It was carefully nurtured. He grew up in one of Europe's most intellectually rich households. The Mendelssohn family was a cultural powerhouse in Berlin, surrounded by poets, philosophers, artists, and musicians. His grandfather was the philosopher Moses Mendelssohn, and his sister, Fanny Mendelssohn, was herself a gifted composer and his closest musical confidant. Throughout his life, Felix maintained remarkably close ties with his siblings. His deep love and admiration for Fanny, his inspiration, critic, and creative partner, is well documented. Less famous but still important was his relationship with his older brother, Paul Mendelssohn, who devoted his career to banking and art collecting, but was also a highly capable amateur cellist. And here we should pause on that word, amateur. In the 19th century, it didn't mean someone unskilled. It simply meant someone who didn't earn a living from their art. Paul's musicality and ability was no doubt superb, and Felix cherished their connection. Felix composed a set of cello variations for Paul in 1829 and a first sonata in 1838. When he set out to write the second cello sonata between 1842 and 1843, he affectionately called it "Your Sonata" in letters to Paul. Yet the final dedication went not to his brother, but to Count Matvey Vilhorsky, a Russian cellist and music patron who had become one of Mendelssohn's champions and who was also the dedicatee of Schumann's piano quartet. This period of Mendelssohn's life was both triumphant and troubled. His piano trio in D minor has just been hailed by Robert Schumann as the master trio of its day. His long gestating Scottish symphony was finally complete, and his hymn of praise, Lobgesang Symphony, had premiered to acclaim. He was also balancing an intense career as the director of the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra and as founder of the Leipzig Conservatory, roles that placed him at the center of Germany's musical life. But in late 1842, tragedy struck with the death of his beloved mother. Mendelssohn wrote to his brother Paul in sorrow, quote, "The point of union is now gone. We are children no longer." Many believe it is this complex mix of triumph and loss, familial love, brotherly connection, mourning, and reconciliation that lies beneath the surface of this grand symphonic second cello sonata. Now, let us turn to the music. From the very first bars, Mendelssohn sweeps us into a brilliant, high-spirited world. Several elements make this music particularly striking. First, the key, D major. This is no casual choice. D major carries a sense of radiance and celebration across the classical tradition. Think of Handel's Messiah, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, or, for the connoisseurs, Bach's Sixth Suite for solo cello. All in D major, all glowing with triumph and joy. Second, the time signature, an exuberant 6/8. This compound meter, two sets of triplets joined together, ta-da-da, ta-da-da, creates a buoyant, dancing pulse. It recalls not only the infectious spirit of Bach's Sixth Cello Suite, but also the irrepressible energy of Mendelssohn's own Italian symphony from 1829. This music transmits not a sense of building toward joy, but breathless joy itself. The cello bursts forth with affirming, ascending figures, while the piano bubbles underneath in brilliant chordal motion. Many musical journeys begin with tension, a question, or an unfolding path. Not this one. This sonata opens already in triumph, declaring its victory from the first breath. Interestingly, while most sonata form treatises tell us that the second theme should contrast sharply with the first, often more lyrical, more relaxed, Mendelssohn has no interest in slowing down here. The second theme is perhaps just a bit more singing in character, but it's just as boisterous, just as quick-footed, and just as eager to rush forward as the first. An amazing moment arrives with the recapitulation, and it's one of those striking triumph over grief instances. Suddenly, the relentless momentum pauses. The cello introduces sighing, descending half steps like a quiet moment of mourning. Then come the questioning arpeggios, delicately recalling the energy of the first theme, hesitant, searching, before the music bursts forth again with renewed, unstoppable energy as the recapitulation sweeps in. It's as if Mendelssohn allows just a flicker of vulnerability to surface, only to gather himself and push forward with redoubled vitality. Now, listen how this movement is brought to a dramatic close. Second movement, Allegretto Scherzando, Mendelssohn whisks us into a shimmering, mischievous sound world, alive with the same darting, elfin spirit that animates his Midsummer Night's Dream Scherzo. And that's no coincidence. Around 1842, he was crafting both pieces, and the playful, fantastical energy spills seamlessly from one into the other. As the movement unfolds, a surprising shift occurs. Mendelssohn momentarily lets the playful sparkle fall away, allowing the cello to voice a tender lyrical line. Thank you. But soon, the restless scherzando returns, this time transformed. Mendelssohn's ability to push the mood from light-hearted play into something bordering on desperate intensity is nothing short of masterful, giving the movement a striking emotional depth beneath its airy surface. The emotional heart of the sonata. The Adagio third movement opens with a solemn piano chorale, a clear and reverent homage to Bach, Mendelssohn's great musical hero. Mendelssohn, after all, was a central figure in the 19th century Bach revival, famously bringing the composer's long-forgotten St. Matthew Passion back into public performance, reigniting interest in Bach's sacred works across Europe. Then the cello enters, not with a sweeping melody, but with a quiet, speech-like recitative, voicing something deeply personal, almost private. This movement feels like a profound conversation between past and present, between sacred tradition and personal grief. Scholars have drawn parallels here to the aria Es ist vollbracht, It is accomplished, from Bach's St. John Passion. The cello seems to rise in a passionate soliloquy over the piano's steady chorale, improvising gently, pleading, supplicating, as if searching for solace. In the final measures, Mendelssohn draws inspiration from Bach's chromatic fantasy and fugue, painting an incredible picture that combines quiet resignation with gentle acceptance. The cello's somber pizzicato reinforces a motionless, timeless drone, and the final bars dissolve into a haunting, ethereal echo of Bach's spirit, leaving the listener suspended between mourning and peace. The finale opens with a witty back-and-forth prodding between the cello and the piano, each seeming to surprise the other with quick musical jabs and encouragements. After the emotional weight of the adagio, Mendelssohn is searching for his footing, attempting to recapture the buoyant spirit of the opening movement. Soon, Mendelssohn gathers momentum. The shadows lift and a bright, lively theme bursts forward, full of vitality. This movement is brimming with invention, rapid runs from both instruments, spirited interruptions, playful turns, and a remarkable sense of chasing after joy and ultimately capturing it. Mendelssohn propels the music forward with relentless excitement, bringing the sonata to a close in an unstoppable surge of vitality. D major reigns supreme, shining in the final celebration of life, light, and triumph.
Francis Poulenc, born in Paris in 1899, was a composer of striking duality. Deeply religious, yet mischievous and playful, capable of both lighthearted charm and profound emotion. Although largely self-taught, his extraordinary compositional gift quickly made him a central figure in France's musical life, particularly as part of the influential group Les Six, or the Six. Les Six was less a formal movement and more a circle of composers united by artistic spirit. Together, they sought to move away from the heavy romanticism and hazy impressionism that had dominated early 20th century French music, favoring instead clarity, simplicity, and fresh influences like jazz, popular song, and neoclassicism. Poulenc's own output spanned nearly every genre: songs, chamber music, piano works, choral pieces, and opera. His music is marked by transparent textures, graceful and often bittersweet melodies, and a subtle, sometimes sly sense of humor. His clarinet sonata, written in 1962, just a year before his death, is dedicated to Arthur Honegger, his friend and fellow Les Six composer who had passed away a few years earlier. This sonata beautifully showcases Poulenc's sharp sense of instrumental color and conversational interplay, blending lyricism, wit, and elegance in a uniquely French voice. The sonata unfolds in three movements. The first movement bears the unusual and seemingly contradictory title Allegro Tristamente, lively and sad. Poulenc creates a striking mix of moods, alternating between cheerful, perky sections and more lyrical, bittersweet moments. It opens with the clarinet's energetic, playful theme, immediately answered by quirky piano chords. It It is notable how the ensuing musical line oscillates between a serious and a more popular style of French chanson, something so seamless and masterful in Poulenc's hands. The middle section, marked très calme, very calm, introduces a reflective, contemplative mood. Another magical moment is built simply on a recurring arpeggio in the clarinet, which is marked in French, sweetly monotonous. The second movement, Romanza, is flowing, expressive, and tender. The clarinet sings a long, arching melodic line, at times crying in desolation, at others sighing softly in resignation, often delicately ornamented over the piano's gentle harmonies. This movement carries a deep sense of nostalgic longing, inviting the listener into quiet reflection. Harmonically, it is more stable and centered than the other movements, focusing purely on warmth, intimacy, and lyricism. The final movement, Allegro con fuoco, bursts forth with fiery energy and playful brilliance. The clarinet darts through rapid passages while the piano propels the momentum with lively syncopated rhythms. Amid this relentless drive, the music occasionally pauses for contrasting, more lyrical moments, echoes of the sentiment from the slow second movement. There's a delightful sense of humor and cheekiness woven throughout, with playful recalls of fragments from earlier in the piece, adding to the movement's charm and wit. The very ending, with its playful stops and starts, is both effective and great fun, bringing the sonata to a close with a characteristic wink and a final burst of wit. The sonata's premiere was a historic moment. It was premiered shortly after Poulenc's death in 1963 at Carnegie Hall by the legendary clarinetist Benny Goodman and none other than Leonard Bernstein at the piano.
The final piece on our Duo Dialogues program is Camille Saint-Saëns' brilliant Violin Sonata No. 1 in D minor, composed in 1885. By the time Saint-Saëns wrote this sonata, he had already composed his three popular violin concertos and more than 36 chamber works. The Irish musicologist Arthur Hervey once remarked, and I quote, "It may be said with truth that Saint-Saëns was the first French composer who showed himself able to compete successfully in the intimate and yet supremely difficult genre of chamber music with the German masters of the past." End quote. This sonata is a dazzling example of French romantic style fused with classical structure, showcasing Saint-Saëns' exceptional command of the form, his flair for virtuosic writing, and his gift for creating music that is both intellectually rigorous and emotionally captivating. Let's hear from violinist Stella Chen, who will be performing this work at the festival, about her thoughts on the sonata.
The Saint-Saëns Violin Sonata is a special one, and I think one that musicians and audiences both enjoy because it's, it's fantastic. it's fiendishly difficult for both players, both the violinist and the pianist. It's definitely got that wow ending that audiences love, but it's also so intricate. And what I personally love about it is that to me, it's almost like it's not programmatic music, but it's almost like programmatic music in that I feel like as a listener, you can kind of take a backseat and it's like a guided storyline. If played right, I think there should be a very compelling story that's unfolding in your mind as the performers guide you through it. It is cyclic. So Saint-Saëns uses material throughout the four movements don't stand alone. There's recycled material, but again, he brings it back in such a different way that I feel like with just the slightest bit of imagination, you can really take that material and see how it's been transformed. And there's so much nostalgia and reflection, and it allegedly inspired Proust, you know, In Search of Lost Time. So it's obviously that powerful that, you know, audiences and readers and authors are able to take that use of musical material and use it to describe memory in such a vivid and powerful way.
The sonata has four movements, but is divided into two large sections, each pairing two linked movements, a structure Saint-Saëns would reuse in his famous Third Symphony the following year. The first movement opens with a restless, stormy theme played in unison by the violin and piano, immediately setting a tense, agitated mood for the entire work. And here is Stella sharing her thoughts.
The first movement is interesting because you know, even within like the first 16 bars, there's so many meter changes. And that's something that the performers know, but it's completely hidden from the audience. It's very wandering and it's full of spooky colors. And that's part of the magic of the movement. Saint-Saëns was really composing a story. So he gives no consideration to bar lines and symmetry, and it works very well. There are so many contrasting colors. It goes from spooky to sort of terrifying, and then it's just simply beautiful.
A lyrical second theme in F major soon follows. Saint-Saëns will later use this very theme to transition into the second movement without a pause. In the development, Saint-Saëns even includes a short fugato passage, a nod to more conservative, formal writing. The second movement, Adagio, unfolds with a tender, song-like melody full of introspection and grace. This movement was a favorite of the novelist Marcel Proust and is believed to have inspired the fictive sonata in A la recherche du temps perdu, or In Search of Lost Time. Let's hear from Stella again.
The second movement is the movement that inspired Proust, allegedly. It's gorgeous. It works with the theme very well because it's starry to me. You have these chords and arpeggios in the piano and just so simply beautiful in the violin part.
Now the middle section introduces pastoral melodies, providing a gentle contrast. The second large section of the sonata, comprised of movements 3 and 4, begins with Allegretto Moderato, a graceful scherzo marked by delicate interplay between the instruments. Let us hear Stella Chen describe it.
And then we get to the third and fourth movements, which are acrobatic, extremely difficult, and easy listening for the audience, and very difficult playing for the performers, but it's the performer's job to make it sound fantastic and effortless. People like to say that the third and fourth movements have a lot of perpetual motion. I personally don't like that term, just because to me, it makes the music less serious or it's less full of material. The third movement has this flying up ostaccato technique that's fantastic. It's like I imagine a circus. Thank you.
In the trio section, the violin floats a serene, long-breathed melody, offering a moment of calm. After a brief return to the graceful scherzo and another touch of the trio theme, this time voiced by the piano, the final movement, Allegro Molto, bursts forth with a relentless, racing passage in the violin. Here is how Stella Chen describes this wild finale.
The last movement, which is crazy scales going up and down for both performers, and it's kind of like a wild goose chase.
This movement is packed with brilliant runs and driving rhythms, with both instruments sharing in the dazzling passages, often drawing comparisons to the thrilling excitement of a concert encore. A moment of joyful recognition arrives when the serene second theme from the first movement reappears, creating a beautiful cyclical structure that ties the entire sonata together.
And then the theme comes back from the first movement, and you're flooded with a different kind of emotion.
The work ends with a brilliant, virtuosic conclusion.
And then it ends with actually the piano and violin moving in octaves, which is just nightmarish for the violinist because the pianist's intonation is always correct. But it's fantastic, it's very exciting, and that's how we come to a brilliant conclusion.
The sonata was dedicated to and premiered by Belgian violinist and Paris Conservatoire professor Martin-Pierre Marsic, with the composer himself, a master pianist, at the piano. It quickly became a favorite among audiences, but only a few select foremost virtuosos dare to tackle it, be it on the violin or on the piano. This concludes our discussion of Music at Menlo Concert Program 1, Duo Dialogues. A special thank you to Amy Kota for her immense help in procuring the audio samples, to the organizations who provided access to their catalogs, and to the artists who agreed to share their thoughts on the music. I'm Dimitria Tappan.
And I'm Haeyeon Park. Thank you for listening, and we cannot wait to see you at the concerts.
Audio notes are written and produced by Dimitria Tappan and Haeyeon Park in consultation with David Finkel and Wuhan. Many thanks to Stella Chen for speaking with us for this session. Audio excerpts are courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Beethoven Sonata for Horn and Piano in F Major, Opus 17, performed by Radovan Vlatkovic, Horn, and Juho Pohjonen Piano, courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Mendelssohn Sonata for Cello and Piano in D Major, Opus 58, performed by David Finkel Cello and Wuhan Piano, courtesy of Artist-Led. Poulenc Sonata for Clarinet and Piano performed by Anthony McGill Clarinet and Gloria Chin Piano, courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Saint-Saëns Sonata for Violin and Piano No. 1 in D Minor, Opus 75, performed by Elmar Oliveira Violin and Juho Pohjonen Piano, courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Music at Menlo.